Lost, Unanswered, Episode 64, begins in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What if everything that happened here happened for a reason?
There's a certain gargantuan quality about this thing.
Every question I answer will simply lead to another question.
Two players, two sides. One is light, one is dark. They're all dead. I've looked into the eye of this island, and what I saw was beautiful.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Lost Unanswered podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Richard, and we are here to talk about the last episodes of Season 3, Through the Looking Glass. And now we know what the Looking Glass is.
Yes.
We know what that station is called and where it is.
Now, one thing that I often wonder is, of course, Through the Looking Glass is a reference to Alice in Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, you know, whenever they make these references, they have a lot of references to Alice in Wonderland that I pointed out along the way, White Rabbit, stuff like that.
Sure.
But when you look at the actual title, Through the Looking Glass, I'm looking to see where the parallels are with Alice in Wonderland, and I don't know if I just went blind to them or what, but I could not find any hardcore parallels.
No, and there really wasn't, and I think the reason is this is more a play on words and quite possibly even a bit of a red herring.
Okay.
And that you kind of expect something that's going to have some relationship to Alice in the Wonderland. And in the fact that the station is called the Looking Glass, I really think the title is more just a play on words.
Okay.
But, you know, and you're right. You know, we already see, you know, these little hints here and there. But I think the title is more red herring than it is literal.
Okay. Well, if there's anybody out there that can see the parallels or has something to say on Through the Looking Glass and as far as being a parallel with Lost and Alice in Wonderland, or if you notice anything that we didn't, please email us at lostunanswered@gmail.com or give us a call at 1-888-284-2314. So, Richard, I got to say, only 2 episodes left, and then we go on break.
That's right.
We've got this week, which is Through the Looking Glass Part 1, and we've got next week, which is Through the Looking Glass Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go on a nice break and come back with season 4 at the end of the summer.
Yeah, no, that'll be great. No, I think that's going to be great because it'll give us a little bit of break over the summer and we'll come back fresh because season 4 is pretty interesting. We start to jump into the flash forwards and it's a whole twist on what we've seen so far in Lost. And so there's a lot of really interesting kind of twists. It is unfortunate that season 4 was the strike year.
Right, so I think there was only 12 episodes?
12 or 13,
yeah.
And there was supposed to be, in fact, there's an episode that covers all of the individual people on the freighter, and from my understanding, what was supposed to happen was you were supposed to get an episode each for each of the people. In other words, the story of what's going on the freighter was going to be much more involved.
Right.
Originally. I think that they, you know, when the strike came about, then it really came down to they crushed it all into one episode. They had 4 backstories. I'm pretty sure it was 3 or 4 of people on the freighter.
Right.
And you get 4 quick little backstories. And you can see how each one could have been easily expanded out. But apparently each one was supposed to have gotten at least their own episode, plus other episodes that would have expanded on things on the island too.
Right.
So we would have got, yeah, another probably 20-some episodes. But isn't this about the time where they made the decision, made the deal with ABC?
I believe they made the deal with ABC on a certain date that they were going to end or something like that.
No, it was a number of episodes. It was the first time that a series was going to end.
That's right. That's right, because they were going to have a number of episodes, but it was next season that they decided to have the shorter seasons to expand it out over more time.
Exactly. Rather than having be six seasons instead of five. Right, instead of like five.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they stretched it out over two seasons instead of having one big season, which
right.
which was good. It was good for ABC. It was good for them. It let them drag out the end. Although I'd almost like to see it in its original interpretation, because as you well know, I'm not exactly happy with the last season of Lost. So
no, as we'll be more than
happy to pick that one apart for you when we get there. Trust us.
What's funny is we started this podcast the day after.
Yes.
The day after the season finale. So if you want to hear us talking, if you want to hear some really bad podcasting, go back to our very first episode when we did not know what we were doing.
No, it's pretty bad. But it's we should get some clips of some of that stuff, you know, what we talked about then, and see where we feel now.
Yeah.
Because it would be interesting to listen over that, as bad as it was, to listen over that and see what we were talking about and what we were thinking at the time, and kind of see where we're at now. So that, I think that'll be kind of interesting to make that comparison from the beginning to the ending.
Yeah. All right.
Because we were not kind. We were not kind.
Not at all.
At all.
I'm thinking, though, when we go back and rewatch the ending, I'm probably going to be a lot more kind. Now that after analyzing it a lot further, I'm seeing more of the dynamics of why they did what they did.
Yeah, I guess. All right, let's get into this episode. Right. I don't want to go on and on. I can go on and on. Okay, before we get into the episode, I want to talk about one thing, because as I was watching it, it dawned on me, you know, when Jack is ready to jump off the bridge,
yes,
and there's the accident behind him. Is that Jacob?
I assumed that Jacob's hand was in it.
Jacob, is that the same thing that Michael runs into when he tries to kill himself? And you know,
I think it is. I think Jacob's hand was in it. Uh-huh. And they're still living by the rules that Jacob set, which is you cannot kill yourself.
Michael, okay, so Locke was a candidate, right?
Yes.
Then how was it that Ben could kill Locke without
Because at that time, first of all, Locke was Ben was able to kill Locke, just like on the island. Ben can still kill other people. Whether you're a candidate or not, you cannot kill yourself.
Oh, right. You can't kill yourself. Okay.
Which is why Locke could not choke himself.
He wouldn't have died.
The
rope would have given out, or he'd have just fell to the ground. And that's why Ben, interesting. I never thought of it that way.
Which is why Ben was sent off by Man in Black.
With the
instructions to kill Locke, knowing that Locke wouldn't be able to do it himself.
You know, it's interesting how not apparent that is at the time, the first viewing, because there was so much more with, you know, because Locke reveals who he's going to go see, and right. that's when Bell kills him. And so that's all you think about. But you're right. You know, there's a whole other layer there of MIB basically saying, go back and kill him.
Right. You know, and then at this point, Jack standing on the ledge about to jump off, and then you have the accident. And of course, what happened to the person with the accident? They came right to. They had no problem. You know, they went into a coma for a while. It looked like they needed surgery. Mm-hmm. But in the end, the person that got hurt ended up waking up perfectly fine, not needing surgery.
Exactly.
So. Yes. So that was MIB. That was Jacob, because
giving Jack something to fix.
Right. Well, giving him a reason not to kill himself without physically saying, go ahead and jump, but you're not going to die.
Exactly.
I think that's what happened here. Now, what's interesting when you watch these, this is our first flash forward.
Right.
But you do not know it until the very end.
That's true. Good point. Very, very good point. Right. We don't realize that we're in the future now.
Right.
We think we're in the past still.
Right.
And then somehow this is prior to Sarah.
Right. Well, not because prior he's got to a beard. Sarah. This he's is after big, Sarah. Fluffy beard. This is after huh? Sarah because of the time that Sarah comes to the hospital and says, "You still have me on," but before he went to the island.
Before he went to the island. Before he went to go get his dad.
Right. So why? And they make quite a few references in here to make you believe that. First of all, you have Sarah, you know, saying, "You still have me on as your contact, exactly. emergency contact." So what you assume right there is that this is right after the divorce.
Exactly.
And he basically went Good downhill point. Right after the divorce. He's trying to get his pain meds, and as he's trying to do it, he, you know, the woman stops him and says, you know, you can't write medication for right. yourself. He goes, no, I'm Jack Shepherd. This is Christian Shepherd.
Right.
So, right. you know, Good right point. There he makes yeah. a reference to his dad being alive. And then you have another reference where he's arguing with the head surgeon and says, you want to see a drunk? Look at my dad.
Yeah, yeah. Which is one of the best lines right there. That is one of the best lines there ever. Okay. So cut number one is what I call walking music. And I don't know why I told you to capture it. Just wanted to capture it because this has got to be the best and kind of, I don't know if you can bring it in or whatever, but you know, it's, this is the walking music. This is the ultimate in walking music is what it is.
Yeah. So, what this ended up becoming the basically overture for the entire episode.
Exactly.
It's like every time anybody moved, this is what they played.
Right. Right. So I thought it was kind of interesting to have this whole, you know, even though we've all heard it, you know, it's one of those things, you know, you're going to watch people walking somewhere when you hear the music cue up.
Right.
I mean, that's just a given. It's all about walking. That's all that music has ever played for, is them walking from some point to another point. And that's it. It's all about exposition. And I've always liked that music, whoever came up with it. That's probably some of the best walking music I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And they could have used some of that in Lord of the Rings that they had.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the other thing too, is they kind of blend it in and it makes it fun. Cause it's upbeat. It's got that upbeat to it instead of the downbeat to it.
Right. All right. Next one, Charlie Toys with the girls, Bonnie Greta. Did you misspell something?
Oh, no. Okay. So what I meant there was Charlie is toying with the girls, and the girls' names were Bonnie and Greta. That's
oh,
why
okay.
I put it that way. But he's toying with them. He's not, you know, he's just popped up there. They caught him, and now he's playing games with them. And I think it's kind of funny to see Charlie in this kind of mode of, I don't care. You can't kill me because right. I know I'm going to complete this. So I might as well have some fun and throw you off your game, and maybe that's what keeps me alive anyway.
Right.
And so that's cut number two.
Who are you?
Look, if you tell us how you got down here, we won't hurt you.
I came in my invisible submarine. Don't you see it?
Hey! Take it easy.
Take it easy. He's one of them. Why are you here?
Huh?
How did you find out about this station?
Juliet told us. She's one of us now. In case you haven't heard.
Stop! We gotta call Ben.
Yeah. It's called Ben.
I love the way he does that at the end.
I do too, man. It just spits the blood out like no big thing. Yeah. Yeah, let's call Ben. But that's a really good comedic, that's that kind of drama and comedy kind of mixed together where Charlie's playing off these two girls that are obviously angry, want to know more information, and he's only going to give them enough information to drive them nuts and right. to basically, in this case, get the crap beat out of him, which he doesn't seem to be all that concerned about anyway, which I find rather interesting because a lot of Lost is kind of like that.
Now, what
people
I
get
loved,
the crap beat out of them, and it's like, oh yeah, whatever.
What I loved rewatching this, and my wife actually pointed this out to me, is the actress that played Greta plays on the TV show Once Upon a Time, right now the evil stepmother, shall we say. Her name's Regina, or the evil queen.
Okay.
And what I loved about this is, you know, Kelly pointed that out, or my wife pointed that out, and I actually had to explain to her that Once Upon a Time has a lot of the writers from Lost in it. They have a lot of the cast from Lost. They have a lot of references to Lost in it. In fact, at one point, and I would really have to go back and watch, there is a scene where somebody falls down and they're looking up at the sky and a plane flies overhead, and it actually has the oceanic symbol.
No way.
There's another part where they're drinking McCutcheon whiskey.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a dead giveaway.
You know, so there's a lot of references to Lost in Once Upon a Time.
Nice.
Including the actors such as Lana Perilla and why can't I think of her name? The Aussie girl.
Right. God, I've drawn a blank too.
How can
Claire.
I be? Claire, yeah.
Yeah, Claire.
I'm trying to think of her real name.
That's interesting that they kind of it's interesting that they get the same kind of group back together.
Emily DeRaven.
Yeah.
Emily DeRaven plays Belle.
Okay. But it's interesting that they get, you know, that the same writers all kind of get hired on, or at least a large portion of the same writers, and then you even bring in the same actors end up on another show. And I think that's, you know, I think there's, you know, from a producer's point of view, you're going to want to see if you can't tap into that.
Right.
Because you know that there was more than just the writing. You know, everybody was pulling 110%. And if you can get people like that on your show, then, oh, yeah, you're going to be able to pull something off instead of having, you know, it all be about the writing or it all be about the actors. I mean, once you get that. And that's where Lost clicked, because everybody got so involved in the whole show. Even the actors didn't know squat. And that made it really great for them, because they didn't really know what was going on. So they'd almost have to watch an episode just to understand half of the stuff that they did.
Right.
And I think that's what made it interesting for them.
And that's what I'd like. So if you're looking for another show right now to watch or listen to some Once Upon a Time podcasts, I think you'll really enjoy them, because there are a lot of Lost references and there are certainly similar themes and writing styles.
Yeah. Awesome.
Okay.
Okay, so let's jump on to cut number three, and this is Bonnie and Greta call Ben.
Come in, Ben.
Hello?
It's Bonnie. Ben, are you there? Can you hear me, Ben?
Why are you breaking radio silence?
One of them's down here.
I'm sorry, what?
We have tied up, but he's here. One of them swam down here.
Who?
Which one?
He won't tell us.
It's Charlie.
Thomas said hi. How does he know about the station?
He said Juliet told them.
All right, sit tight. Don't do anything. I'm sending help. Mikhail, you need to go down to the Looking Glass and find out what Charlie Pace is doing down there.
You told us the Looking Glass was inoperable. Flooded.
I lied. Mikhail, I need you to go now.
I can be there by dawn. But if Juliet told him about the Looking Glass, what else did she tell them?
That's a very good point, Mikhail.
That's a very good point, Mikhail. Yes, yes. He's about the only person that seems to be thinking. You know, if they left him in charge, he'd just wipe everybody out and be happy and run the whole damned island himself, you know.
Well, you know, this is definitely Ben deceiving everybody, you know, and that's how pretty much how Ben keeps his power over everyone is through
deception.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm sure that if they knew that the Looking Glass wasn't flooded, Ben would be able, you know, people would be asking him, well, you know what? I want ESPN. How come that's blocked and I can't get it?
Right.
Ben can go, well, because the Looking Glass was flooded and.
Exactly. Exactly. We can't get in there to shut it off.
Right.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, it gives him an out. It's not me making the decision. It's somebody else making the decision.
And then, of course, he gets caught in it, and all he has to say is, I lied.
Yeah. Well, and he can get away with that, surprisingly. He can still get away with that, which, you know, nobody was really willing to test Ben, you know, or to challenge Ben in any way.
No.
Especially after he took Widmore out. So, I mean, that's really what it comes down to is Ben, even when he just outright admits his deceit, people are like, oh, okay, whatever. You know, let's all bow to Ben again. I mean, that's, you know, yeah, I mean, he's got that much control.
It makes you wonder, you know, why there hasn't been like a coup going on.
Well, I almost want to think that the temple is the coup.
You think so?
Yeah, a little bit.
Like there's a headbutting between Ben and
Dogen.
And Dogen. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think Dogen and Ben see eye to eye. Not at all. I don't think, and I think, because I mean, what are you doing living, you know, what are you doing in all this if you're going to do this? Holy crap, why wouldn't, you know, if you're at the barracks, then you're safe because of the sonic fence.
Right.
If you're at the temple, you're safe because of the ash.
Right.
So what's the point of living there? I mean, you see what I'm getting at? I mean, Ben kind of has gone off on his own a little bit, and I don't think Dogen really is down with that.
I'm wondering if Dogen still has more or a better connection with Jacob than Ben does, and Ben doesn't like it. And because Ben's taking his...
Well, see, that was kind of my problem with Dogen's character, is that what was the point? I mean, yeah, he's there to protect, and yes, we know that when he dies, then miraculously, you know, it wasn't the ash, it was Dogen that was keeping people out, or the combination of the ash and Dogen. But, you know, so yeah, it seems to me that Dogen had this kind of power that Ben didn't have.
Maybe Dogen knew MIB's real name, and it's like Rumpelstiltskin. If you say it, it banishes him.
Yeah,
I'm just pulling that out of my ass.
At this point, we're just reaching for straws. But,
yeah, I was just kind of making a bad joke right there.
It's always bothered me, the Dogen character, because it's like Ben's in charge, and then all of a sudden we have the temple. And we've known about the temple forever. And then the temple comes about, and there's another guy that leads the temple. It's not like, you know, he's got his own group of people that are part of the temple. And that's one of the things that did kind of bother me, was this whole idea of, oh, there's this whole other group that basically just don't do anything.
They hang out at the temple, and they wear really baggy clothes.
And that's it. I mean, that's the other thing, too. I mean, what's the point?
Maybe the temple is more cultish. They kind of look like a cult.
Yeah, but it was almost an isolating kind of thing. You know, because what's the first thing you wanted to do with those people? Kill them.
Yeah, that's true.
Just kill them. Kill them right now. If it wasn't for the cross and for what Jacob did, they'd all been dead just that quick. And so it's almost like they're the purest version of it.
Yeah.
And Ben's kind of, you know, he's kind of stretching the rules a little bit.
Ben has a bunch of mutts, and the people at the temple are purebreds.
Purebreds. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
What's the Harry Potter version of that? Muggles?
Yeah, muggles.
Okay.
Muggles. Okay, so let's jump on to cut number 4. And why did they put that? Did the plan work?
Well, let's play it and figure out what he said.
Yeah, there we go.
Why were there only 2 explosions?
Maybe they didn't have to blow the 3rd tent.
But those gunshots, what was
that
about?
He's okay, Rose.
Do you believe that?
Listen, they had no idea that we were waiting for them. And Saeed's with your husbands. They're going to be fine, and they're going to be a couple hours behind us.
Then we should wait for them here. You go on.
No one gets left behind.
If you say live together, die alone to me, Jack, I'm going to punch you in your face.
Fair enough, Rose. Fair enough. But we have a plan. And for all we know, it worked. It's going to be okay. Everything's going to be all right. Let's just keep moving, okay?
Live together, die alone, Richard.
So, in all this plan, they couldn't have come up with a signal?
Yeah, I don't know. A different color of smoke or something like that.
Or 3 gunshots and then 3 more. You know what I mean? Something like that. 2-2 and then 2-2. Or, you know, some sort of, you know, if we're done and we're good to go, here's a signal. of
rat-a-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat.
Whatever. Whatever it is, you know, something that, you know, hell, you could have another, you know, explosion. You could have another pile of dynamite somewhere else, because then if you don't, you know what I mean? Then you just blow up the fourth one and you get four, you know. But they're right. You know, there's only been two explosions, and now where's the third?
Now, the one thing about the third explosion is you kind of look like, you know, when you first watched it, you think, what the hell? Come on, Jin. You can't blow up some dynamite. But then you realize the first two are trying to blow up the dynamite, and they're a good distance away.
Uh-huh.
And they've got long, you know,
yes, big,
nice long rifles. And Jin's got a 9mm pistol.
Yeah.
And he's trying to hit the dynamite that's inside of the tents.
And you know, the thing is if you watch the bullets, they all bounce all around the dynamite, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so close. But, you know, he gets tagged from behind, the typical movie tag of oh, don't move. You know, the barrel of gun comes into the frame of the camera. I'm so tired of that.
Well, yeah. That's just a part of movie making. You can't have a movie without a off-camera bad guy with a gun.
Although the best one of those that I ever saw was in Lethal Weapon. That was the best one. You don't expect the guy to be out there and to catch what's his name from Lethal Weapon when he's shooting in the desert. Yeah, Gibson. He's out in the desert, and he's the sharpshooter, remember?
Yeah.
You probably haven't seen it in years.
I know, it's been a long time.
And then the guy comes in, and you're all like, oh, he's got it. You know, he's got him fooled, and all of a sudden the gun barrel comes into view. And you're like, oh, well, that was the end of that. But I think that was the best reveal because, one, he's so far out in the desert, and he's hidden in all these bushes, and he got dropped off like half a mile back, so he's shooting from like, so you don't expect, I mean, they didn't even circle the helicopter that far away to catch him in the bushes, so you don't expect that at all, and I think that's one of the better reveals, and I think everybody just uses that up, uses it too much.
I would. That would be like every scene of mine when I direct my TV show.
A barrel coming into the...
Yeah. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, it could be two people at the coffee table having conversation over tea and crumpets. And right, out of nowhere, a barrel comes down. A
barrel comes sliding into frame.
Yes.
Exactly.
All right. Cut number five is Charlie doesn't know the code. And let's play this and we'll talk.
I'm going to ask you this one more time. Why are you here?
I'm here to turn off your jamming equipment. It's in there, next to the flashing yellow light.
How'd you know about that?
I know, because I know. Whatever you ladies do to me, I'm going to turn it off.
You are, huh?
Most definitely am.
So what's the code?
What?
Oh, Charlie, if you're going to turn off the jamming equipment, you're going to need the code. And only three people know it. Me, her, and Ben.
Well, guess I won't need the code. Since this entire station's going to be flooded anyway. I just turn off your little jammer and the helicopters come and rescue all my friends.
But if this station floods, what happens to you?
I die.
Now, this is a man that is basically speaking from the idea, yes, that he's already resigned to death.
Yes, he has already resigned to death. And I think that's the moment where Bonnie and Greta aren't really sure about who they have. And I think that gives them pause more than anything else that he's toyed with them at that moment. I think that gives them pause.
Now, Bruce Lee once said that the hardest person to fight is the person that is willing to die to accomplish, yes, one goal. And, yes, he said it doesn't matter if that goal is to punch you in the nose.
Mm-hmm.
If he is willing to lay down his life in the pursuit of punching you in the nose, you will get punched in the nose.
Yep. Yeah, because all bets are off.
Right.
You can do whatever you need to. And at that point, yeah, I mean, that's like going in, you know, and yeah, I mean, that is true. It's got to be the most difficult person to go after is somebody that isn't concerned for their life.
Yeah. And right now, that I think that's what makes Charlie so dangerous right now.
It does. And I think that's the moment that they realize that he is dangerous, that his confidence and that I'm going to do this. And even at code or no code, I know it's going to happen.
Right. If it meant, blowing a hand grenade right on the thing itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which we could have been there too. I mean, that could have been an option too. Okay. So, of course, we'll learn more about the code here next episode.
Yes.
When we get there. So why don't we jump on to cut number 6, right?
Yes.
And I like this cut because this is kind of one of those cuts where this is the Ben manipulating his own daughter, but basically his adopted daughter. And I like the way he kind of toys with her a little bit and doesn't, and then kind of reveals what's going on. And I don't know if we get all of that in this one or if there's another cut in this, but let's play cut number 6.
We're going to the radio tower.
Not we, Richard, me. You're going to take everyone to the temple as planned.
Now might not be the best time to go tromping off on your own.
Oh, really? And why not?
Because people are asking questions, Ben. About leaving home? About what happened to Locke?
About Jacob?
Not to mention the rapidly spreading rumor that everyone who went down to the beach is dead.
They're not all dead.
Where are you going?
Hello, Alex.
I asked where you were going.
Well, I thought I might go for a walk. See if I can't find Jack and all his friends.
I'm coming with you.
All right.
What?
I said all right. In fact, I think it's a good idea. I mean, you do want to see Carl again, don't you? Get your pack. I'm leaving in 10 minutes.
There's 40 of them. And you're alone. They're going to do whatever it takes to get off the island. What do you think's going to happen when you get there?
I'm going to talk them out of it.
You know, Alex should have known the second that he said, oh, yeah, you're coming along. That should have been the cue where she's like, I ain't going nowhere with you.
I need a gun.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she should have definitely thought about that. That was a little too, as much as she knows about her dad and how manipulative he can be, it's a little surprising that she doesn't take a little bit more pause than what?
Yeah.
A little bit more pause would have been warranted at that moment. So that's kind of, I think, a missed moment there. But I don't have much more to say than that. I've just always liked the what reaction.
No, I think I really like this. One thing that it shows is how Ben can be very cold and calculating at moments, especially when Richard says, there's rumor that everyone that went down to the beach is dead. His reaction is not everyone. You know, that's a very calculated reaction.
Very. Yes, very much so. Very much so. And so, yeah, and he's still trying to hold on to that control.
Right.
You know, even though he's basically kind of admitted to lying, admitted to deceit, being deceitful. You know, he's still trying to maintain that control. And in this situation, it's Ben being mean is the only way that he's going to be able to kind of maintain that.
Right. All right. Okay. The next one is Kate and Sawyer's conversation. I really like this conversation. So this is really interesting. Let me play it for you right now.
Okay.
Something's wrong.
Lots of things are wrong, Kate.
Jin, Bernard, Saeed, they should have caught up to us by now. I want to go back to make sure they're all right.
Of course you do.
What's that supposed to mean?
It means, Kate, there's always someone to go back for.
What's the matter with you?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I'm fine.
Why don't you just tell me what happened?
What'd you do that for?
To wake you up. Ever since you got that tape from Locke, it's like you've been sleepwalking. You don't care about our friends, fine, but it's like you don't care about anything anymore. And since when did you start calling me Kate? You know, they sent Juliet to check out, son. But she was there to check and see if I'm pregnant, too.
Well, let's hope you're not.
Yeah, for some reason, she had me piss on the stick. I thought it was just, some weird ritual that she liked to do. She was just into that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, that's about it, too. How the heck are you going to find out that she's pregnant without revealing to her that she, you know? Yeah, that's, I think what's most interesting about that conversation is the, I hope you're not.
Right.
And the look and the tone of Sawyer at that moment. It's like, no, this is, I've already got one kid to deal with. I don't need another one.
Well, and then you also have, you know, Sawyer's basically been in a funk for a while now.
Well, and then she's talking about the tape that Locke played for him.
The tape that Locke gave him of Ben and Juliet's conversation.
Oh, okay.
So,
you know, that's what I thought it was. So I guess it seems that Sawyer would just make him angry.
I think more of what it was is, you know, the way that Kate reacted when she thought that Jack was with Juliet.
Right.
And Sawyer thought that she was over Jack. And when she reacted the way that she did, it had nothing to do with the tape necessarily. Right, it had everything to do with he liked Kate.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And he's letting her believe that it's the tape. Right. Yeah, that's a good point. It really is more about the fact that she kind of rejected him.
Right.
And he was really thinking that he had his hooks into her better than that. And when that kind of fell apart, you know, and he even makes reference to that. I think it's fifth season when they basically become part of the Dharma Initiative. He's talking to somebody and he says something about, you know, I had her.
Right.
And I let her get away. And of course, you know, he's talking about Kate at that point, but you know, at this point he's in a real relationship with Juliet. I mean, this is two seasons from now, but
yeah,
you
know, yeah. At that point, him and Juliet have been together for 3 years.
Well, and at that point, he's grown a lot as a person.
Right.
He's gotten rid of so much of that anger by, more than anything, being what? The top cop.
Right. Being the opposite of what?
A total opposite of what he'd been. And so now that I kind of think about it, that is, it's almost, you couldn't have had Sawyer be anything else but a cop in the alternate universe.
Right.
Because that really is his calling. And even as a cop in the alternate universe, he even makes it, well, yeah, I'd either been a cop or a criminal.
Well, there really is a thin line.
Yes, exactly. The thoughts are the same. It's just a matter of whether or not you execute or whether you're trying to come after. Yeah, exactly. Right. Okay, so
cut number 8 is Juliet offers help. This is when, you know, they want to go back and check on the people.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, yeah, this is a good one.
Look, you got a job to do here. I ain't gonna stand in your way of doing it. But you sure as hell don't need me. What do you think you're gonna get done? Alone and unarmed?
He won't be alone. I'll go with him.
No.
Twenty minutes ago, you weren't even interested in going, and now all of a sudden you're telling Jack that
I didn't want to go with you. Sawyer, it's a suicide mission without guns.
I know where there are some guns.
Liar!
There's a hidden cache a couple of miles from here. I can take us back to the beach and a route past it.
Juliet, you don't have to do that.
Yeah, Jack, I kind of do.
Yeah, there is no guns.
No, there's no guns, but, you know, it doesn't really matter at that moment. You know, Juliet's going back to do what she can, and knowing that she doesn't have guns, knowing that she doesn't have access to that.
She does have her kick-ass ninja skills.
And at the same time, she's also got Sawyer, and she knows that Sawyer would be able to do something. And between the two of them, that there's a good possibility they could come up with a plan based on what they see.
Right.
And when you think about it, I mean, come on, the two of them would easily have come up with a plan to take at least one of the guys out, you know, a little bit. And, you know, it's easy enough to separate. You only got three guys.
Right.
You got two people. You get people separated. You know, all you got to do is hide enough that, you know, you can take somebody out. So, I mean, between the two of them, I could see them being able to take those three guys out. And I think Juliet kind of knows that she's got enough skills, and she knows that Sawyer has these kind of skills. So, guns.
At the same time, Julia's repenting.
Yeah, see, that's the other thing, too. Yeah, she wants to kind of show her rebellious nature.
Rebellious towards them, but also repenting to the group.
Right, exactly.
In that, you know, she felt bad for all of the deceiving and everything that's been happening to them. So I think even Juliet, at some point in the past, has resigned to the fact that, you know what, she doesn't really care if she lives or dies.
Well, I think she kind of knows that she's just not getting off the island.
Right.
And that means that at some point she's going to die because she's, you know, there really is, her life is over.
Right.
And so, yeah, to a certain extent, it is, you know, Juliet's, you know, realizing that, you know, I can either help or I can just sit here and be, you know, a stick in the mud.
Right.
And yeah. So, okay. So, now this cut number 9 is classic Ben. He talks Mikhail down off the angry tree.
Right.
And it is so classic Ben, and it's so well written. Just play it. Cut number 9.
You have to understand, everything I did for the island.
The island told you it was necessary for you to jam your own people.
Yes, it did. You've always been a loyalist, Mikhail. Now I'm asking you to trust me.
To trust Jacob, who told me to do this.
Why would Jacob ask you to lie to your own people?
Because this island is under assault by forces stronger than anything it's had to deal with in many, many years. And we are meant to protect it, Mikhail, by any means necessary. The jamming was for everyone's security. We are in a serious situation here.
So why not trust me?
I made a mistake. I should have told you, and I apologize. Mikhail, are you still there?
Yes.
I need you to help me. I need you to help me clean up this mess that I've made. I need you to kill Charlie.
Make sure that the jamming mechanism continues to function at all costs.
And we can't risk Greta and Bonnie telling the others about what we've done, so you'll have to take care of them, too.
How do I know you didn't say the same thing to them about me?
Because if I had, Mikhail, you'd already be dead.
That's kind of a cliche line also. That whole you'd already be dead.
Yeah, it is a bit of a cliche line. But in the context of this conversation, I think that it kind of goes beyond cliche. Enough that it doesn't seem as cliche as it could have been. There's enough buildup. There's enough other dialogue that the you already be dead doesn't seem as cliche as I think it could have come off a lot cheesier. And I don't think it did.
Yeah. I do like the interaction between the two of them with this. That's about all I have to say.
All right. Well, let's jump right into the aliens. This is probably one of the best lines in the entire series because it's so offhand and it's so tongue-in-cheek, but it's played so well. And so just play it, cut number 10.
So, when you pulled us out of those polar bear cages and put us on the Chang Gang, what the hell did you have us breaking all those rocks for anyway?
We're building a runway.
Runway for what?
The aliens. I don't know what for. Do you think they told me everything?
Yeah, whatever you say. So, you screwing Jack yet?
No. Are you?
How far away are these guns?
There aren't any guns.
What?
I lied.
You lied.
It was the only way he'd let us go back.
So why are you going back?
Karma.
And that proves your point that you just said. That
yeah.
It's about redemption, and in her case, karma. And, you know, and that mixes the two up. You get the funny moment right back into a serious moment almost instantly. And again, that's, you know, that's lost. That's the excellency of, you know, the writing that was lost.
Right. I still say, Juliet has to be one of my most favorite characters when it comes to lines. You can understand how, you know, Sawyer fell in love with her because how could you not? She's witty. She's tough, great looking.
Yeah, no.
I mean, and throwing out lines like that, you know, so did you screw him? No, did you?
Yeah. You know, exactly. Exactly. And she doesn't really, you know, she doesn't hold back. And I think that's part of it, too, is that's the kind of woman that Sawyer would settle down with. Somebody that is his equal. You know, and he doesn't want someone like, I mean, he wants Kate, but I don't think he wants Kate in that she would be a little clingy.
Right.
Well, you know, yeah, even though she's independent.
Kate is needy.
She's a little needy, and where Juliet is an equal. And I think that's the difference. And I think that's a realization he comes to that we never get to see, which is something that's always disturbed me. Oh, 3 years later, I'm like, wait a minute. You know, I want to see how that relationship developed.
Right.
How is it that the two of them actually got together? They just kind of gloss over that. And yeah, we get to see the back end of it, but there's so much that could have been mined from this kind of crossover of them being friends into becoming lovers. And there's a lot of dialogue that could have been mixed in there that would have made it interesting. But that's one thing that really disturbed me is they never really go back into that 3 year period. We get to see all kinds of off the island for 3 years. But when it comes to what happened on the island for 3 years, it's like, you just forget about that.
They were in the Dharma. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Oh, they were in Dharma. It's like, what? Yeah, no, tell us more about that relationship. But no, that's another thing that kind of gripes me a little bit is they could have definitely explored that in a better way because that was two characters that really made it interesting.
Yeah. All right. Cut number 11 is Alex finding out the truth about who her mom is and the truth about Ben. So this is great. I love this interaction.
Yes.
If we head north, we should get to him before they reach the tower.
Why did you let me come?
I let you come because I'm delivering you to your new family. I let you come because you betrayed me, Alex.
You locked Carl in a cage. You put him in a room and tried to brainwash him.
I didn't want him to get you pregnant. I suppose I overreacted. We better get going.
Ben, why do you have to stop them? Why won't you just let them leave?
Because I can't, Alex.
So I like the whole pregnancy thing because that just, you know, pointed out the fact of why he was doing everything that he was. It all comes down to the fact that if Alex gets pregnant, she dies.
Exactly. And that's what he wants to avoid. I mean, he wants to completely avoid that. And by kind of being, you know, a bit of a jerk about the whole thing, you know, he does really protect her, or at least I guess I should say his intentions were good. Now, whether his execution was that's a different story, but the intentions were good. I thought I had something more I was going to say about that. Now that I think about it, I really don't.
Okay. Let's move on to our last one.
We'll get on to there's more of that conversation too when we get into
next episode.
Into the second episode. So yeah, let's get into the last one. Cut number, you have it marked as 11, but it's cut number 12.
I put two 11s there. Okay.
This is 11D.
Put the gun down. Now get up, John.
He shot me and I can't move my legs.
You can't move your legs. Now get out of the ditch, John.
Why?
Because you have work to do.
Okay, so definitely this is MIB, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely, no question about it. The one question I have, though, is how did he... We know about the Walt that he took a picture of before, and it had to have happened while it was raining. That's why he was wet. But this Walt is older. He's off the island. How would he have grown? Obviously, the actor would have grown, so it makes sense. But
sure,
in the confines of the story.
Well, I think that was part of the problem they had with Walt. Is that, yes, by the time you get to the fourth season, he's no longer a 12-year-old, he's 16.
Right.
And A problem, of course, is that it's only been 90 days or 100 days. What is 100 and some days at this point? So, yeah, it's one of the problems they had that they knew they had. And it's one of those things you just have to look over. I mean, it's just, you know, they had no choice. They wanted him back. I guess they could have done it with somebody else, but Walt was a good shock. And I think they were probably going for the shock more than they were. I think they realized that people would realize, oh, hey, yeah, oh, that's right. That kid from the first season, this is three seasons later. So the kid's gotten older. Right. So I think they just figured the audience would accept it, period.
Right.
And move on to get the nice shock of what the hell is Walt doing there?
But yeah, that's definitely MIB. It's MIB healing him.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's MIB basically putting him back together. Get out of the ditch. Now you can walk again. I'm going to make your wound maybe not better, but it's going to start healing a hell of a lot faster.
Right.
And so it's definitely, because that wound doesn't heal for a while. I know that.
No.
So, you know, of course, you know, the problem is that you send Walt or Locke on a mission, and we know the result of that mission now. I mean, it's, you know, he is doing basically what Ben's desire is, which ultimately is MIB's desire, is to keep everyone on the island, to not let anybody get off.
Right. So, all right, I think we should wrap this up. We will see you guys next week. I'm going to start the music. That was our podcast, episode 64, Through the Looking Glass, Part 1. Again, if you want to get a hold of us, give us a call at 1-888-284-2314. Email us at lostunanswered@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/lostunanswered. And on Facebook, become a fan and a friend at facebook.com/lostunanswered. And we'll see you guys next week with Part 2 of the Season 3 finale, Through the Looking Glass. And of course, Richard, you know where everybody can go for everything Lost.
There's only one place to go. It's lostunanswered.com. Go there now.
All right. See you next week.
Take care.